Hey, it's Chris, and welcome to the Between Dreams podcast, a show where I chat with people who are not only dreaming big dreams, but doing the things to bring them to life. Today's guest is a magician, and he uses things from our everyday modern world and incorporates technology into his performances. You may have seen him on his recent AGT appearance or from a previous appearance on this podcast, but we would like to welcome back to the show an amazing performer and a good friend of the Between Dreams world, Trigg Watson. Thanks so much for joining again. We had a bit of a makeshift interview last time you were on the show in a hotel lobby. So now we're just going to, and I did say we're going to have an extension of that conversation. So this is an extension of the conversation. Can you give people, if they didn't listen to that and somehow haven't seen you kind of dominating the television and internet lately from your recent AGT appearance, what exactly is it that you do? So listeners of this show will know what magicians do, but I think you bring a little bit of a fresh spin to it. So in your words, how would you describe what it is that you do?
So I call myself a high-tech magician, which basically means that I use magic to explore the future. And I use, you know, the technology that is currently around us in the modern world and try to manipulate it in such a way that makes the modern world feel like magic again, and maybe gives a glimpse into the future along the way.
Yeah. I want to jump right into that because I think there's a lot of magicians that want to specifically stay away from technology because there's this feeling of like, oh, it's just a camera trick, or oh, it's just this technological thing. They just have a new app or something. And what I see when I watch your stuff is, yeah, there's technology at play, but it's still it doesn't take away from, it's still mind blowing. I don't think anyone leaves your thing being like, oh, he just has technology that's doing the trick for him. It's still so mind bogglingly insane that it works. So how did that work for you when you were kind of deciding to fully lean into technology? What was the backstory of you kind of like taking that route that's not common for magicians? A lot of magicians want to go back old school and like just be real analog.
Yeah, you know, I resisted the label of like tech magic for a really long time because of the same fears and concerns that I think a lot of magicians have. You know, magicians traditionally, you know, often might employ technology secretly that the general public doesn't know about to create the illusion of something just being completely impossible. You know, I think magic is strongest when it feels organic, when it doesn't feel like people suspect that, you know, maybe, you know, the minute you start using tech overtly, there's a possibility that the audience will think, oh, they're just using technology to achieve this. So it's a tightrope that I walk in my work. And, you know, I just found that more and more the newer ideas that I was having for my show, all of them had some sort of tech element, not because I was trying to be a technology magician, but just because, you know, it used to be that a ordinary object you could pick off of someone's coffee table to blow someone's mind with a magic trick was a deck of cards. And now you're going to be lucky if you can find that. Now what you're going to find is someone's phone on their table or their iPad. So it just felt natural that, you know, the magic that we should be doing should be using the stuff that's in everyone's pockets. And it's no longer pocket handkerchiefs and decks of cards and packs of cigarettes or coins. You know, there's so much coin magic, and that's, you know, doesn't feel as relevant anymore. So, you know, it's really just an effort to create magic that's relevant to people and, you know, that feels of the age we're in. And the challenge with that is, of course, that, you know, potentially it makes people more suspicious that, you know, what we're, you know, in order to achieve these magic effects, you know, they can just write it off as like, oh, that's just some app I don't understand. So, because I overtly use technology, I'm very careful about the sort of effects that I choose to use. You know, there's a whole host of magic tricks that other magicians perform that I stay away from because while their method might be technological in nature, their theme is quite organic, and I'm sort of the opposite, right? I'm presenting with an overt theme of technology and an overt theme about exploring the future. So often my methods might be a little bit more practical in order to be deceptive. And, you know, I think it's very easy for, you know, anyone, any magician that's incorporating technology, sort of grab the wrong end of the stick and start creating, you know, magical effects that don't really hit the audience hard enough because there's not this sense of complete impossibility. You know, there's an overused quote, which is Arthur C. Clarke's, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. And it's true. You know, if you go too far ahead of what people, you know, are aware of technology wise in the world, suddenly they'll just write off your entire show as something that, you know, technology they don't understand. And for me, I try to keep my, you know, my magic performances using technology that's still familiar, you know, like everyone has a TV in their homes. Everyone has an iPad, an iPhone. You know, I'm not creating magic with, you know, 3D printers per se, or, you know, I'm not to the point where I'm, you know, doing a magic, I mean, this may not be too far away, but, you know, some crazy AI that people don't understand. You know, I'm trying to, you know, create magic with the stuff that's organic to us. Yeah. And I think that kind of helps preserve the feeling of impossibility, because it's like, yeah, I know what an iPhone does and doesn't do, you know?
Right.
And when I do something that can't be explained by our sense of what, you know, a phone can do, then I'm doing my job as a magician.
Yeah. Yeah. A couple things in there. Yeah. As you were saying that, it's like, yeah, I think some performers and magicians particularly, of course, like, are like, oh, I want to use everyday objects. And then they're, you know, ripping a newspaper in half. And it's like you said, it's like, when was the last time any of us held a newspaper in our hand? It's like, yeah, it like holds up to the test of time, because like we understand that that's impossible. But I love that thing of like, oh, this isn't like taking anything away by using technology. And if you haven't seen the AGT thing, no spoilers here for your appearance, of course. But yeah, like a TV screen on stage. Okay, we all understand that. But I've never seen somebody interact with it and it interact back to me in a way that I absolutely cannot comprehend. And I think what makes that even better is I can't anticipate what's going to happen next, which is often a problem. Like, hey, I'm going to rip this newspaper in half. Like, oh, I bet what could happen next? It goes back together. You know, that was amazing. And like so many of the things that I've seen you do, particularly like the latest AGT act. And it was like, I have no idea what's going to happen next. And it builds upon itself. So that in itself, I think, is worth noting and, you know, congratulating you on creating something that, because it's easy to just come up with the thing like, oh, this is obviously going to be what happens next.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I'm honest with myself, there's also an element of fear in what motivates me and you know, motivates me to create my new pieces, is that, you know, there's a certain part, intellectually, I know that the art of magic will always exist. Our ability to appreciate mystery and for magicians to create things by taking advantage of people's assumptions to give people a moment of wonder will always be possible. But it's really scary to look out at the media technology landscape and see that all of a sudden, you know, more and more people are going to be wearing these computers strapped on our heads that suddenly manipulate the physical world that we view with our naked eyes. You know, suddenly we're going to have these augmented reality, you know, digital overlays on top of our everyday existence. And as a magician who specializes in creating magic in which I manipulate the physical world in impossible ways, it feels like a threat of being replaced. And I know that, you know, intellectually magic will always find a way to stay one step ahead. You know, the way I sort of see that tech is like, all right, this is coming anyway. I'm not going to be able to stop it. So what can I, you know, what if I lean in? You know, what if I say, okay, this is, what if I, instead of, you know, being, you know, a lot of magicians, I think, as a result, try to stay, okay, well, let's present magic in a very organic place. You know, let's go back to an old vaudevillian era and, you know, create magic with, you know, props of another age. And for me, my approach is to lean in and say, okay, I'm going to run towards that fear. See if I can take this tech that isn't being, you know, completely isn't completely widespread yet. And what can I do with it? Even though there is this existential threat of how it might influence my work, maybe there's a way that I can harness it and go with the flow in such a way that ekes some magic and wonder out of it before we get desensitized by it. So I like to exist sort of in that little space between when something is you know, approaching the, you know, being a widespread, you know, sort of everyday luxury that we take for granted. And, you know, when that's happened, and try to exist in that little gray area and know that for a few months, maybe a year or two, I'm going to be able to create some wonder out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. So I think that resonates in a way that, you know, we were kind of chatting about it before we started recording, and there's this idea of innovate and being different for the sake of, you know, being, oh, this person is so innovative. And there's like this sense of like, oh, that's a cool, it sounds like a compliment in a way. Oh, this performer is so innovative. But at the end of the day, innovation is not what an entertainer's job is. An entertainer's job is to be an entertainer. And I've been in, you know, heated discussions about this, you know, the art versus the entertainment. And yeah, there's art being made, but I really you know, my like thesis is entertainers should entertain. The audience comes first. It's fulfilling for the entertainer, of course. But the audience and like creating something that that makes the audience feel something or think something or respond in a way is what ultimately matters. And it sounds like that's what you're doing. You're not innovating and being different or doing something crazy just to make a statement. You're doing it because it creates that sense of wonder in the audience's view, in the audience's mind. You touch on that a little bit about how, you know, because I would imagine you have to be careful about being clever for the sake of being clever with what you're doing.
I mean, I certainly get a certain element of like pride or satisfaction from being a magician that, you know, that is doing things that other people aren't doing, you know, and I think from a, you know, just a pure, you know, getting your stuff out into the world, there's value in people saying, oh, I haven't seen that before. But I try not to create with that being the end goal. Like the goal here is to say, what would resonate with an audience in 2023? What is going to engage an audience that spends half their days scrolling through TikTok? Like, how am I going to wake people up and get them in the room? And as a result, like the answer for me has been, well, all right, we can't say put your phones away anymore. People's phones are out. Like, may as well just absorb them into the show, you know? And so, you know, half of my show involves people taking out their phones and using them in some way to help, you know, create a magic moment together or to send information to me that plays a role during my routines. And that's, you know, the goal was not like, oh, what can I do that's different? I know, I'll use people's cell phones in my show. The goal is no, like, how can I, you know, how am I going to reach my audience? And I think more and more it has to be through the technological channels we're using in everyday life. And, you know, a lot of the stuff in my show has just sort of come out of that thought process of like, why aren't entertainers using people's phones more? Like, you know, why are we making someone come all the way up stage to stand up on stage in front of the audience and hold a prop when I could just send hold a video feed up to them or have them hold up their phone and go in selfie mode and then project that image onto my TV screen and then interact with that way, like we do a FaceTime call. Like, that makes sense for the world we're in. And I just want to make sure that, you know, everything I do feels organic to the age that, you know, the time we're living in.
Yeah. Yeah. So related to that and like feeling connected to, you know, what we are connected to every day in a connected, kind of literally connected to everything at all times. So what's that process for you? Because I can see people, you know, interacting with their phone all day. I'm thinking about it through a lens of, you know, my main, you know, output lately is content, you know, podcasts, video content, things like that. So it's a much more direct thing. I see people on their phone. I can be like, oh, I need to make more content for those people to watch. You're seeing it through a different lens of, oh, these people are utilizing this in what they're utilizing in their everyday. you're kind of taking it to a different level of like, oh, I'm going to utilize that in a obviously on stage and on TV shows and creating it like that. So what's your process like when you see somebody using a phone in a way? Like I think it's two parts. Like, what's the process of like creating that act? And maybe before that, what's the process of like, what do you see in the real world that sparks that bridge to connect it to what you are going to create for that act on stage?
I think I'm a little bit old school in that I love having a live audience. I like being on a stage in front of a bunch of people who are seated in rows, ready to take in an experience, which inherently is a very old-fashioned layout of entertainment. I mean, when we can just scroll through and get customized entertainment tailored exactly to our past preferences and cultural biases, you know, it kind of makes you feel like, well, why am I going to buy a ticket and show up at a theater to sit for an hour and a half with a bunch of other strangers to consume this experience? You know, so in some ways, it's my attempt at compromise, I guess, of knowing that, like, I grew up wanting to be someone that is entertaining a room full of living, breathing human beings all together, and sort of having a certain nostalgia for that collective human thing to be all in a room experiencing something live, but also acknowledging that that's not where most of us are living in the world. Most of us are living in our phones and, you know, living these digital lives. So I think in some ways it's me trying to reconcile the two. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I am always just looking, you know, I think for me, you know, from a thematic standpoint, you know, I'm most interested in using my magic to explore the future and exploring how maybe using magic to highlight people's fantasies about, man, what if this were possible? You know, in the future, what if we could do this? So I'm looking around and saying, okay, well, I see a bunch of people ordering their groceries on Instacart. Like, what's the next iteration of that people might be dreaming of in some, you know, sci-fi future? Well, it's probably like reaching into the screen and pulling out the items from the screen instantly and not even waiting for them to be delivered at our door, you know? Or, you know, we're already using ChatGPT, you know, to, you know, have our questions answered. What if ChatGPT already knew what we're going to ask or was, you know, at the point where it was reading our minds beyond just interpreting the text we put in. I mean, some of these things are sort of scary concepts to explore, but I think, you know, a magic show is a safe place to sort of playfully explore these themes. So I think a lot of my inspiration really just comes from what's in the pipeline for humanity. You know, what are we grappling with? And there's plenty of people, you know, I don't know, talking heads, you know, spreading this doomsday sort of narrative. And I like to think that, you know, my show might be a place to sort of playfully explore the joys of technology and maybe live in a world in which we explore what might benefit us or might bring a certain amount of play, you know, into our lives. And I don't ignore the fact that there's a dark side to technology's inevitable development, but I think it's also important for us to celebrate the innovation and to celebrate the magic in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. So let's go back to your approach, which I want to acknowledge, and I will acknowledge this to not take away from the power of the live entertainers and this, you know, as everyone has done virtual performances over the past couple of years. And I want to shed a story for the listeners of the one time when you were on the road and had a virtual, this was a year ago or so, when more virtual performances were happening when we couldn't be in person. And you were traveling through town, through Atlanta, and you asked to do a virtual show here from MySpace. And if any reasonable person was traveling and needed to do a magic show on the road, they would have showed up with a suitcase and done their version of a virtual show. You showed up with a massive TV screen, more cables than I probably have here, several computers, you know, I don't know how much stuff you brought. And again, my point of saying this is not to be like, oh, look, you carried all this stuff and all this stuff. But the dedication, I want to acknowledge the dedication to create that experience. And you were willing to lug around what looked like a 50-inch TV on airplanes and set it up and all of these things. And same thing, working on now cruise ships and corporate events and where all the places that you're performing and traveling with these big things that are not easy. But you're willing to do it, A, because it's important for you to innovate and share these things that are important to you. But same thing again, but to create those experiences for the people in the audience. So what is that for you? It would be a lot easier, and trust me, as somebody who lugged unicycles and juggling knives around the world a few times, it would be a lot easier for you to simplify your show and do it out of a briefcase. What keeps you going to do the hard work that allows the audiences to fully experience your vision?
Well, first of all, Chris, you saved me that one time. I'm so grateful that when I knew I had to do a virtual show in Atlanta, I thought of you, and I literally had no other options to come to mind. So I was like, oh God, I hope he lets me use his studio, because I knew you got it, and I knew you knew, you know, what would be involved. So I'm so grateful for that. And I think I remember I left my computer at the hotel and had to run back, and you let me crash like on the floor of your studio to so that I could just keep working on setting up my studio. So I'm very grateful for that you put up with all my chaos. I should also say my stage show uses multiple cameras and a TV screen. So it wasn't exactly like I was carrying around my virtual show in addition to my in-person show. It was literally that they kind of use the same equipment. That's the advantage of, you know, kind of what I do. But so grateful for that.
Same thing though. You're bringing that stuff around. A lot of magicians decide to simplify, you know, right.
Yeah,
they make
pack
the show
small, play big kind of mindset. There's this mindset of, I think there's this like sort of pride or, you know, sort of one-upsmanship that comes, you know, they're entertainers that sort of brag about how little they carry. You know, I can entertain people for 90 minutes with nothing but my carry-on suitcase. And I think that's a beautiful thing. I appreciate people's minimalism, but I also think that the strongest magic doesn't always happen when you make practicality be the number one priority. And there are certainly magicians that I look up to who are masters at blowing people's minds and giving them an incredibly, you know, impactful experience, and they carry nothing with them but a deck of cards and a microphone. And, you know, I'm a big fan of their work. That said, I think there's also room in, you know, the world of magic and entertainment for, you know, magic that has a little bit larger production value or magic that, you know, explores, you know, the way that we're interacting with technology. And that's just happens to be a lane that I have chosen. And it's a genre of magic that excites me. And I'm a little selfish. Like, you know, I had a day job for a little while. You know, I've experienced what it's like to not be a magician completely full time. There's other things that I could be doing to make a living. So the only reason that I am a magician is because I want to be the magician that I would want to see, that personally would excite. I want to see this. I want to be doing the show that I would personally be most excited to see. And as a result, practicality really isn't on the top of my list. You know, that for me, the idea is king. And if I'm excited about it and I want it to exist in the world, then I accept that it might require an extra suitcase or an extra HDMI cord or a giant TV monitor. And yeah, I'm okay with that. And, you know, again, I think it's partially just a little bit selfish. I want to, you know, what gets me excited, you know, when I have a new idea, you know, often the first iteration of anything that's new in the world is complicated. It's not refined because it hasn't, you know, it's not a classic. You know, there's a lot of magic that, you know, we'll take like the linking rings, for example, you know, a beautiful piece of magic that is, you know, it's a perfect piece and is so strong because magicians have handed it down from generation to generations and made it the most simple, elegant effect there is. And when you decide to start creating magic with, you know, merging virtual reality with live camera feeds and, that's a genre that couldn't have existed hundreds of years ago. So I sort of accept that it's going to start out more complicated, and I may as well put the first version into the world and or be one of the first to be kind of playing with these concepts and accept that it will get simpler. But the only way to simplify it is to give it stage time and to road test it. And slowly but surely, you know, every piece in my show does get more manageable, but it just has to start as this ugly, chaotic, overburdened thing with a lot of with a long checklist of things I have to travel with. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I remember there was a time, it was at Scott Neary's show when he was doing a pop-up for Stefan's birthday out in Vegas. And Amazing Jonathan was there. And, you know, at the time, shortly before he passed away, and you know, wasn't in the best shape of his life as far as like health wise. And he was backstage putting together these jokes and props. And he had this massive fish tank that he was filling up with jugs of water, and he had to wheel it back. And then he went out, and I was like, man, this is gonna, like, I can't imagine what he's gonna do with this giant fish tank filled with water. And sure enough, it's like one little punchline line in the bit, and it didn't, you know, and it was so amazing to see. It was that important to him. He was like, I want to do this joke. I'm gonna go fill up this fish tank with bottled water, and so that he could get that one line out. And it wouldn't have, he would not have gone home happy if he didn't do that. And yeah, it was like such a testament to, this is what I've committed to. This is the show that I, you know, I love that. When you said, like, you could create the show that you would want to see. And it's definitely not, almost never is what you said when performers are like, oh, I'm going to make it more practical. Almost never is that in the best interest of the audience. I don't think. And like you said, certainly, like, there's the other side of that is if you lean on the props too much and you lean on that stuff too much, that's probably bad. So I want to acknowledge that so it doesn't get, you know, pulled out of context. But yeah, thinking about, like, show, you know, the creating a spectacle, you know, at some level of it is amazing. And that's not bad, where that, you know, some entertainers are like, hey, if you don't want to be a magician and you don't want props, like, you can just be a stand-up comedian and take it to the very ultimate too. Yeah. So both sides.
I think it comes down to really what your creative goals are, you know? And I think if someone's creative goal is to be an entertainer that, you know, it makes people laugh and gives them, you know, an amazing time, then you certainly don't need more than a briefcase of props to do that. My goal is to try and, you know, push the art forward in such a way, in a way that, you know, incorporates the technology that's around us. And I think because of that, you know, because that's what I've committed to, there's no way that I can make that practical because it's too new. It's, you know, it's still working itself out. So, you know, I think, again, it's, we pick our struggle, you know, like, we're going to struggle anyway in the making of our art. You know, we just get to pick which battle we choose to fight. And yeah, for me, I fight TSA. That is who I fight.
You've picked the worst people to battle in the world.
I've learned to work with them. We've come to a mutual understanding. I know what their tendencies are and their you know what causes alarm. So I've learned.
Nice. I love that. You've battled the one group of people that could actually ruin your show.
I mean, I did almost shut down the entire Miami airport with a pill container of popcorn salt because it looked like something else, I think, and somehow didn't respond well to their tests. But yeah, you know, those are the things you have to deal with along the way.
Yeah, that's great. I think one of the reasons why some people take shortcuts is it minimizes the risk that they have to take, because if you do big stuff, the bigger your show gets, the bigger the risks that you take, the more, you know, the more you step off that beaten path, the more things that can go wrong. Do you want to touch on that, like your willingness to accept that things can go wrong, and how do you handle that on stage if and when that does happen?
Being able
to, you know, I think entertainers are the best at pivoting, thinking on your feet. And so many people, even if they're not entertainers, can learn from that mindset.
I think there are sort of two ways to operate. You know, there's the approach of just committing to using material that is safe, that is hard hitting, but, you know, minimizes variables and, you know, allows you to get as close as possible to be able to deliver a consistent, you know, entertaining experience night after night after night. And I have entertainer friends who's, you know, that is their approach. For me, because of the level of complexity and the number of variables and devices that I'm incorporating into my show, I can't do that, given the show I choose to do. So instead, you know, my superpower is having contingencies for everything and knowing that the way I respond to situations is always going to be what the audience judges me on, as opposed to the thing itself. And as long as they feel like they are in good hands, as long as they feel like they don't have to be worried for me that something is going wrong, and instead have to say, oh, the camera's not working. How's he going to work? How's he going to get out of this? And then they realize, oh, he's got a backup camera, or, oh, you know, this routine actually works with someone else's phone, or, you know, my approach is just to have a million contingencies. So, you know, I try to approach every show with a mindset of curiosity, you know, not of, you know, getting tensing up and saying, oh, I hope everything works, because it won't. Not everything will ever work all the time, every day. You know, instead, it's more approaching it with a mindset of curiosity of, like, what opportunities for patience and facing challenges am I going to be presented today in my show? And, you know, purely really approaching it with an air of curiosity and play. And yeah. I've come up with so many things in the moment, you know, where I thought something was critical to the show being pulled off successfully. And then in the moment, something didn't work and my adrenaline problem-solving brain kicked in and I found a different path to take. And that, combined with some thinking in advance of, like, if people's cell phone service isn't good enough in this venue, how am I going to get people to send me suggestions for items that we might order online in the show? Or, you know, if the Wi-Fi network in the venue isn't working, you know, how am I going to deal with that? And just having contingencies in my head, you know, suddenly I acknowledge there's an element of risk, but the risk of the show coming to a halt is pretty low, because I've got forks in the road to take at every single time. And even if I haven't, you know, got a fork that's pre-planned, I know that as long as I approach it with a spirit of play and not have a confrontational attitude with my audience, we're going to get through it together, and it might even make the show stronger.
Yeah, that's so good. And I want to reinforce that. You said something, you can put it back into your words. People are, what did you say? How did you word that? They're going to remember how you reacted to what happened, not to what actually happened. And as a juggler, it's like, I'm going to drop it's impossible that I'm not going to drop something during an hour show. I'm going to drop something on the floor.
Yes.
And I can either let that ruin the show, or I can do something cool with the thing on the floor and make it, a triumph moment. So say that again in your own words of how that was. You said something that was great in there. I want to reinforce it, because I think that's, like, the key to everything.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know that I can take credit for this concept, but it certainly proved true in my work that the audience will always judge you more on how you respond to a challenge on stage than to the challenge itself.
Yeah. Amazing. I love that. I love that. And so, again, it's so relevant to magicians, obviously, and jugglers and people on stage, but people that go to work every day and have challenges. You know, every single person has challenges and things go wrong, and that's how it is. So now we get to choose how to do it. And I think thinking about it in like the entertainer's approach, you know, it's almost, we kind of, I think I feel blessed to have that experience of being on stage so much to learn that, oh, people are watching. I literally don't have the option to be upset about this thing that's happening because I like have to put on a show. And that's an amazing lesson. So I think thinking about that, how would an entertainer handle this challenge if people were, if you were on stage and watching, whether you're an entertainer actually on stage, people watching, there's the lesson. And if you're just an everyday person, you have the lesson to think, what would Trigg do?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I would also hope, I mean, not that, you know, I expect my show to change anyone's behavior in their real life. You know, I would say that, like, if anyone was to get anything out of my show, I would hope that maybe it inspires people to lean in and lean towards, you know, the technological innovation around us. You know, I think there's always an element of fear within change and, you know, the world moving faster than we feel like we can keep up with. But often the joy is when we can, instead of be reactive and be afraid of what's coming at us, we can instead lean in and find ways to use what's coming at us to make our lives easier. And often the wealth and the our lives feeling more playful comes out of us getting ahead of what we're afraid of, as opposed to running away from it. And that's certainly how I approach, you know, my show as a magician. And, you know, I think especially with the technology that's around us, that's how I'd like others to also approach things.
Awesome. That was a great wrap up. I was about to tie it up and ask if you have anything else that you'd like to leave people that are listening with, but that felt pretty good, like a really nice tie up. Is there anything else that you would like to touch on before we tie it up? And also, how can people find some more about you that want to dig in and see what you're creating, both online on content and then, of course, ultimately leading to coming to see you in a live performance?
I would certainly appreciate anyone's support for America's Got Talent. I'm currently on that journey, and fingers crossed, if I make it through the judge cuts round, I'm hoping that I'll get a chance to perform in the live semifinal shows. And I would love for you to vote for me, please. So if you enjoy my work, you would love for you to follow me on you know, all the social media channels, and I'll certainly be posting my AGT journey. I'd love for you to come along with it with me.
Amazing. Do you want to drop those? Where are you at on socials? You want to drop them quick?
Yeah, I'm easy to find at Trigg Watson. That's T-R-I-G-G, like trigger. Trigg Watson, W-A-T-S-O-N, on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Snapchat, TikTok, all of those things. I have a YouTube channel, Trigg Magic, where you can look up some of the TV appearances that I've had in the past. Of course, if you just do a quick Google or YouTube search for Trigg AGT, you can catch my most recent appearance on America's Got Talent.
Awesome. Amazing. Well, thank you for sharing, for returning back to the podcast. This one was amazing. I love sharing and hearing and sharing what you're up to, and your approach particularly is absolutely amazing. Last time we ended it saying we'll come back for another one. I'll leave it at that, because I know that we could probably talk about this stuff, especially as your journey on this stuff happens. So we'll have you back on again. Hopefully,
I'd love that.
So cool. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the end of the podcast. If you made it this far, that means you must have enjoyed this conversation, which means you will probably enjoy other episodes where I bring on different guests who do amazing things and have amazing insights to share as they bring their big ideas to life. So follow this show on whatever podcast platform you listen to podcasts on. And if that podcast platform allows ratings or reviews, it's super helpful for you to drop a rating and review so that other listeners are able to find the show and we continue to bring amazing guests to you. That's it for now. Thank you. Goodbye.